Back with more of Lake Effect Now, I'm Bonnie North. We're getting a chance to listen to some musicians this week, all recorded in and around the Lake Effect Performance Studio. Zoe Muth emerged from the same surroundings that produced Nirvana, Pearl Jam, and Soundgarden. But those weren't the sounds she gravitated toward. Muth and her band, the Lost High Rollers, generate a sound that would be at home on a scratchy vinyl record you might uncover in a Texas antique shop. Her voice elicits comparisons to some of the most loved country and Americana singers. Zoe Muth and the Lost High Rollers stopped by the Lake Effect Performance Studio to chat with Mitch Tyke, but they started with a song from their Starlight Hotel album called I've Been Gone.
Zoe Muth and the Lost High Rollers playing in Performance Studio C1, I've Been Gone. Thank you so much.
Sure.
There was a review of your music a few years ago, a glowing review, I think, that said something like, if you grew up listening to your country music on vinyl, this band is going to be for you. Do you see anything you do as especially old-fashioned or vinyl in its approach?
Well, I think all my main influences were from vinyl records or, you know, my dad's record collection. But I probably should be into new music more than I am. And I don't really aspire to be necessarily like any of that old music, but those were a lot of my main influences, and, you know, old folk music and old classic rock. So,
well, and there is an irony because, I mean, the stuff you're putting out is new music. It just happens to have something in common with people that have come before.
Yeah, and a huge amount of our fans seem to have gray hair. Somehow, I don't know, there's something about maybe the older folk musicians of the 60s and stuff that maybe I have something in common with it.
Without necessarily having the gray hair.
Yeah. I think I have a couple, but my hair's blonde, so they're harder to see.
Well, and so if I have this right, you grew up in Seattle in the 1980s.
Yeah.
And that was kind of an important period for music in Seattle, but it's not music that sounded like this. So how did that music come to find you, or how did you come to find the music that influenced you growing up in that time at that place?
Well, I don't know. Maybe I wasn't musically rebellious enough. I just ended up listening to all my parents' records. And
such as?
Well, you know, a lot of like Bob Dylan and Neil Young, Richard Thompson, John Prine were always – Bruce Springsteen, you know, a lot of kind of – rocky, folky, singer-songwriter people. And
they don't seem like that. Those aren't artists you have to rebel against.
Yeah. It's hard to not like them, but, well, for me. And so I think from that, I always kind of had a tendency to like or want to discover what the roots of some of that music was, you know, the old country and blues. And when I was in high school, they had re-released a lot of the Alan Lomax folk recording stuff, and just all the stories and like how these you know, ethnomusicologists or whatever were going out into the field and trying to discover this other music that had never been commercially successful. Just all the stories seemed so cool, and hearing all these things that weren't really any part of my life growing up as a, you know, in the big city of Seattle. So it was just all seemed really magical, and all that old folk music and blues music kind of resonated somehow.
When you sat down to start writing songs, did it matter to you that you were not from that time or that place? I mean, could you feel like you could credibly channel that kind, that sound, that feel from Seattle?
You know, I mean, it's always been something that I've thought about. You know, it's like people say, well, you sound like you're from West Virginia or something, even though you're from Seattle. And it's not really something that I've ever attempted to specifically try to sing like anybody or like sing with a Southern accent. I think maybe my grandpa's from West Virginia originally, so maybe something about something's in my genes. I don't know. So, I mean, I try to keep that in the back of my mind. It's like not trying to imitate something that's not me necessarily.
Do you, you say you didn't consciously try to sound a particular way like that. How did your singing voice come together? What was it that, you know, people don't generally go to school to become a folk singer or a country singer. So what were the formative experiences that led to who you are?
Well, I mean, the first music that I listened to when I was really young was like Cyndi Lauper and Madonna and, you know, the stuff that was on MTV, I guess, you know, and the Bangles. And so when I was a little kid, you know, me and my sister would sit around and make tapes and make up songs. And I mean, they were all pretty cheesy. But so, I, you know, I always loved singing and, you know, did the school choir in middle school and everything. But it really took a long time to feel confident in getting up on a stage in front of other people and singing. It wasn't, my family's not really that musical. They love listening to music, but nobody plays instruments or sings or anything. So, I mean, I remember singing a song when I was first trying to do open mics and getting interested in playing guitar and singing. I played for a friend of mine and I said, does that sound more in tune or out of tune? And he said, out of tune. So, I mean, it took a while to build up confidence and I just wanted to do it. And I've gotten better and better.
Well, it seems like that's a underrated part of the becoming a musician paradigm. Not just the being willing to stand up on a stage and perform, but to write stuff and have to get over both the hump that people will listen to you and people will hear what you've written and take it for what it is.
Playing music and singing and writing songs, I have had lots of jobs, and I, you know, I went to college hoping to maybe be a social worker or a teacher. But I don't know, I feel like in the songs that I write and singing, it's the only way I can actually communicate with the world what's in my heart. So, I mean, it was just something that I've always felt like I had to do.
Well, we should hear another song, if you would care to do that for
sure.
Us. Tell us what we're going to hear.
This is a new one. It's going to be on a record that hopefully will come out early next year. It's called Mama Needs a Margarita. Pair of dancing shoes.
stayed out late. I used to drink my tequila straight. The boy standing in line to take me out on the dancing floor. Two steppers and two timers, 7 cents and one liner. Tip our glasses.
A great song. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Is there a backstory to that?
I'm not a mom, but actually there's a writer's workshop, or I'm not exactly sure what you'd call it. It's called the Richard Hugo House in Seattle, and they commission writers and songwriters to write on a certain theme and then present it every month. And so the theme this time was motherhood, and they asked me to do it, and that was one of the songs that I came up with for that. And there's supposed to be a whole verse about watching the Rockford Files and Jimmy's eating tacos and, like, daydreaming about that. But I had to shorten it a little bit. But I don't know. It's just I was also a preschool teacher for a long time, almost 8 years. And so I just sort of tried to write from the perspective of – I never want to insult anyone, any, you know, motherhood with that song. Hopefully people just see the humor in it and not – oh, man, what a drag.
I think there are a lot of moms out there that could use a margarita.
Yeah.
Maybe, you know, maybe it's the influence of the instrumentation, but so much of what you do has this kind of melancholy tinge to it. Is it ever hard to reconcile being happy about the finished product with the melancholy sound that comes out?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I think all my favorite songs are pretty much sad songs. I mean, I think they help people heal or feel better, you know, even though it's the saddest story or whatever. And
are there ways that you know that what you're playing is being heard, that you're reaching people the way you want to reach them?
I mean, every time we play a show, I talk to people after the show, and it's great to hear that I have an experience that they, you know, they'll say, well, this song is the story of my life. I think a lot of what I write about is just like really everyday kind of stuff, you know, work and love gone wrong. Every once in a while, love gone right.
It is not really that different than what Bruce Springsteen was writing about all those years.
Yeah, I wish I could do it as well as him, but.
Are there things about you that you think people would find surprising for someone in this profession?
I don't know. Probably not. I mean, I'm still trying to figure out what to do in this profession. Sometimes I think maybe I was meant to just stay in one spot and have a nice garden or something. Be a good cook or something, which I've never been able to be. But I mean, I love traveling and everything, but sometimes I say, oh, I don't really feel like talking to people tonight or whatever. And people say, man, you're in the wrong profession. You should be more exuberant and lively. And that's totally not me at all. But I still love, you know, once we get up on stage and we're playing, it's amazing. And
you made the move to Austin from Seattle earlier this year.
Yeah, in January.
There are a number of ways of asking it, but let me just ask, what have you gotten out of that move?
Actually, recently just went into the studio and played with a lot of great Austin musicians to make a new record. And that was, you know, really our goal. We'd been touring with the same band for about 2 years and just kind of needed a change. We thought, well, there's got to be at least one great guitar player in Austin, right? There's so many musicians there. It's hard to make your name or even make a living. I mean, I think bands that are really good at doing the Texas dance halls can do a lot better. I mean, we do play a lot of kind of country dance-ish music, but I also like to do a lot of long, slow story songs, and that hasn't necessarily worked, but we're working on it. We're playing the dive bar circuit of Austin.
Do you have any long, slow story songs you'd like to leave us with?
Sure, yeah. We could do New Mexico. New Mexico. Down on Central Ave.
Zoe Muth and the Lost High Rollers spoke with Mitch Tyke in the Lake Effect Performance Studio after a concert this month at the Cafe Carp at Fort Atkinson. Our in-studio performance was engineered by John Strelecki, and you can see photos from the session at wuwm.com/lakeeffect. Tomorrow on the show, we'll have three very different musicians, each with Milwaukee ties and each playing in the area this weekend. I'm Bonnie North. Thanks so much for tuning in today. I hope you'll be with us again tomorrow and every weekday morning at 10 for Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee Public Radio, NPR in Milwaukee. Stay tuned. Fresh air is next.
Well, I got a job waiting tables in the middle of